Welcome to Fallen Woman. Tonight's episode was previously recorded, and now as I sit here recording this intro, we are living with a brand new president as of this morning. I feel compelled to say to anyone listening that rape, misogyny, homophobia, and xenophobia are not just words, and certainly not a joke. Sadly, I feel our country has become a joke as we have just elected someone who represents all of these things. Permitting this bully to run at all was an insult. The vote only seems to allow the powers that be to blame us, the people, for them giving this monster the chance to be anywhere near the office. I'm rolling up my sleeves and putting on my fighting boots, no matter what happens. Now more than ever, please go to radiofreebrooklyn.com/pledge and help keep independent radio alive. And again, welcome to Fallen Woman. You are listening to Fallen Woman on Radio Free Brooklyn. I am with one of the most exciting couples I know, Faux Pas LaFay and Aurora North. Hello.
Hi.
Happy to have you here.
We're happy to be
with
you.
Very happy to be here.
I'm excited about your upcoming show.
We are as well.
Very excited.
Wander through the looking glass houses.
Wander through the looking glass houses.
Yes.
It is opening on the main stage at Dixon Place in December.
On the 2nd?
2nd. Mm-hmm. Runs every Friday, Saturday, the first 3 weekends at 7:30 p.m. Mm-hmm. I was very honored about a year ago when Ellie, who's the founder of Dixon Place, gave me a residency and commissioned a brand new work for me and asked me what I would like to make. And
that's wonderful.
I said I wanted to do some sort of take on Lewis Carroll's books, the cherished books, Alice's Adventures in Wonderland and Through the Looking Glass. And so it's a full-length production. It runs 80 minutes. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I say it's like for adult children, meaning it's not a Disney thing and it's not a Tim Burton-esque thing. And you will see all of the characters. They're all represented, and we follow the sequencing of the book. We don't pull a Disney and kidnap the Tweedles and put them in the first book or anything. But it really takes a political, socio, sort of cultural look at things. While there's nothing that is overtly jumps away from the books and you go, why does that happen? One of the things I learned in composition school was actually a quote from Lester Horton, who was Alvin Ailey's teacher, that said, to make a dance, you use who you are, your heritage, and where you come from. So for me, these books, which we all have a connection to, which is why I like doing this project, because I think for most people that were brought up in America or in the West, probably have a relationship to these books or the movie or something. So when you start with a common story and common characters, you don't have to give a subtext.
A relatable theme.
Yes.
Yeah.
So rather than having to give a backstory or a subtext, we can just pull the rug out from under you and take what you already thought was a pretty whimsical, bizarre world and flip it on its head even further. So just for example, like the Cheshire Cat is treated as though it's the manifestation of a god or goddess. So it doesn't think it's God, but God is really just whatever people decide God is, or religion is. However, if we describe God enough that way, we start to believe it. So we're treating this idea of this cat popping in and out as when people want to see God, there's the cat. So that's sort of how we're treating it, but also how the cat ends up feeling about that. Like, I didn't ask for this job. I play the White Rabbit, but she's really sort of this... She's a character who's dead and she doesn't know it, in a sense. So when Alice sees this ghost, this White Rabbit figure that's sort of this...
Marilyn.
She's an amalgamation of, like, Marilyn Monroe or wasps of dreams that were attained but not attained. And so what Alice is really chasing is the unattainable. she's chasing this spirit that never really gets where she thought she dreamed of being. So she's iconic to this Alice figure. She wants to be her, but at the same time, becoming her is never, it's not a thing, you know? So that's sort of how we treat these characters, that you know them, they're references to them.
And when you say she's not a thing, you mean literally because she's dead? Or you mean figuratively in the sense that she's an illusion of femininity?
No, she's not an illusion. She's just, for example, I do a monologue about three quarters through the show as this sort of, as you see her in act two. In act one, you don't realize that there's any lamenting in her at all. And by act two, she's wearing this white sort of very 30s robe that a starlet might wear in her dressing room. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And I talk to the audience about having gone to Hollywood and you know, the missed opportunities and but I mean, it's very, I use humor a lot, like, you know, well, I was only given the porn roles because, of course, I could fuck like a rabbit. And so, and I make little quips about issues today, like, well, you know, I was up for the role of Jessica Rabbit, but they gave it to a human actress. And I think rabbit roles should be played by rabbit actresses. So there's humor. I like to use humor. But it's about these, like, things where I have talent, but it just, and so I'm using that joke of, but I was obviously late. I was in the wrong place at the wrong time. So how the white rabbit is always late for her, it's that I never got the break at the right time. I was a little famous, but not really famous. So what happens is by the end of it, you've sort of seen Alice chasing after this other star, not star, kind of how we have these fringe stars for a lot of us that we love. And she finally catches up with her and starts to ask her questions. And one of those flipping lines is she says, what, like the rabbit's too tired to run. And she says, what, where are you going? And I answer, I don't know. And she says, well, then why do you keep running? And I say, because it's better than here. And so you get this sort of very sad idea. There's no destination for this rabbit. And so now Alice has to deal with this information and go, should I keep chasing the rabbit or not? Perhaps that's not a good idea.
Mm-hmm. I think that's what I meant by illusion.
Yeah,
of
because the idea is we never get a resolution in the books.
Right.
We don't really get a reason.
There's
why
no
she
ending.
Went.
Yeah.
Why did she go down the hole? Why did she go through? Like, it's very fun that she does, but we never get a growth from this character, Alice. And that's what I want to do is like, well, from the beginning to the end, what does she come to learn or not learn?
Right.
And how can we all relate to these concepts? And the one other thing I do, I think the one that's closer to maybe trans experiences, but yet I want it relatable. I don't just like to preach to the choir. The caterpillar scene. I mean, while there's an obvious reference to a caterpillar and a butterfly, there's no transformation of the caterpillar in Lewis Carroll's books. Mm-hmm. I do find the books written since he was writing in the Victorian era, written from a very Great Britain or British Empire superior point of view in a subtle way. There's like a privilege, but that wasn't even a word used then. And so I find it almost offensive that what he did was go, well, I'm going to do this caricature. I'm going to place a caterpillar and it's going to be this guru sitting cross-legged on top of a mushroom smoking a hookah. You know, it's going to be like a Nutcracker Arabian. It's like the most offensive kind of racist thing. So we're not doing that at all. Like, what we're doing with this abstraction of the caterpillar is the real lines in the book, who are you? I've asked the cast sometimes, let's reread this dialogue as if we haven't heard it before or seen it. And so when Alice experiences or comes upon this caterpillar, the caterpillar is frightened and is saying, who are you? Why are you here? Mm-hmm. Because we're using the analogy of this caterpillar, it's not a caterpillar. It's a butterfly.
Stuck.
Don't misgender the caterpillar. The caterpillar is transitioning.
Stuck, yeah.
It's going to go through transition, and it's gone deep into the forest, into these mushrooms, because it wants to transition in private. And when Alice invades that transition, it's like, who are you? Why are you here? But what trans people don't get to do is wrap ourselves in a cocoon and no one sees us, and then we've transitioned. We have to do our transition for years in front of people. But so anyone
it's a lot like having to relive the humiliation of puberty.
Exactly.
Because you can't, I wish I could have spent puberty in a cocoon.
And a cocoon, yeah.
Exactly. And I think the way that any, but I even think the way a cis person or any, but another queer person or a straight person can relate to this is we all have more than one moment or identity crisis in life. Maybe you're laid off from your career job you thought would be your job. Maybe your lover leaves you. Maybe someone dies. And who you are is not who you are anymore. Mm-hmm. So in that sense, we all have had the caterpillar butterfly crisis. And we doubt. And so in that sense, that's how I relate it to, we all know what it's like to go, I wish I could disappear. And then when I feel better, appear.
Yeah.
But it doesn't work that way. So that's how we're treating that scene, is the caterpillar is like, not who are you? I have the wisdom. It's
no.
Who are you? Why are you invading my space? I really don't want to be seen right now. So we're taking the actual dialogue and we're not changing it, but we're going, what if we read this from a different point of view without changing the literature? Because it's important to me to honor the literature.
You're acknowledging the caterpillar's
exactly.
abilities.
So when we do have some of it read a lot aloud by characters, the literal dialogue,
mm-hmm.
but and I don't want to change it because it is classic. I want to go, well, what if we weren't stuck with what Disney and or our initial those implants of who these people were? What if we allowed ourselves to see these conversations totally differently,
reinterpret?
And so that's how we're honoring the literature. But why would you come see a production that has been done before?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And the one other aspect that is different is, you know, there is a lot of research and evidence that possibly Lewis Carroll, even if it was just in his feelings, had maybe an inappropriate relationship for the historical, the real Alice person.
Inappropriate obsession.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
So, I mean, being someone who survived childhood sexual abuse myself.
Likewise.
So what we're doing is, I've told the cast, you know, because this was a book written by a man who was older and sort of was putting the words into the mouth of this woman, everyone in the production, every character, not just Alice, is aware of sort of a shadow or ominous figure. We never see it, but it's always there. It's sort of there. And you feel almost manipulated by it, and you're not sure if you're making your choices or someone else is making them for you. And you're it's scary because a big theme, because the Tea Party,
yes,
really represents a dysfunctional family. The Mad Hatter is the dad. You play the
March Hare,
it's the mom. The Dormouse is the baby. And it's Alice's way of imagining her dysfunctional family. So this mad tea party that's stuck in time at 4 o'clock and it's always tea.
Always
is stuck.
Gonna make me
it's
think
like,
of a dysfunctional
it's
family.
Like every night they have dinner and they sit down together, but then they fight. It's like we can't
and it's
get
always
out of
the
cycle.
Same argument.
It's
a cycle.
It keeps going.
It's always
and,
the same.
And one
yeah.
thing, I went through this crisis recently with my, you know, the last couple of members of my family that pseudo talked to me is, I said to Aurora,
mm-hmm.
you know what? The only way to truly be happy is to sometimes let go of what you were told your family is. Every model I had, because I went through nine marriages between my mom and dad. So the whole model of family that I have is totally fucked. But when the reason it's hard to break abuse or dysfunction
mm-hmm.
is when it's all you know, the comfort of that shit.
That familiarity.
Still feels like home.
Yeah.
So it's scary to leave home for real. So when Alice breaks herself out of the tea party, it's terrifying because while she knows it sucks to be there, she has no clue, she has no template for what to do when she leaves the tea party.
Right.
So her progression is facing these trials that represent the bad parts of her life and deciding not to do them anymore. So that's sort of what we're getting
it's a good
at
moral
with
the story.
That.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So come see it, everybody.
Yes.
Yes.
And I love that it's during holiday time.
Yes. But there are fun parts, like, you know, instead of literal pink flamingos in the Queen of Hearts garden,
we have a pink
flamingo Vegas number.
Yes.
There's comic
really
relief.
Excited about
There's
it.
There's comic relief everywhere.
I am so there. I'm so there. Oh my God. You really had me with the white rabbit, though. I'll tell
well,
you that. That's something I've
heard. Marilyn.
That's very relatable to me.
There you go.
That character. And queer burlesque was something you had addressed earlier tonight. And I only wrote those two words down because it was such a large
topic.
I just felt, keep it simple.
She'll
explain it to me.
Why don't you start, Aurora?
Well, she'll explain it to me.
Yeah.
There's a lot to it, and this came up because recent internet discussions had commentary depicting like straight cis burlesque versus queer burlesque, and or like gay LGBT burlesque, and we had a different discussion earlier, but what I want to say is I feel like it's great that there's a differentiation between straight burlesque and queer burlesque, but what you were saying, Fo, earlier, it's important that we identify who we are as performers on stage and not let others identify us for us.
Mm-hmm.
And so presenting that at the forefront, so for you as a trans person, like out front saying that, outright saying that as a performer, but for us as duet artists, like very obviously expressing that we are two lesbian women, presenting ourselves as performers.
Yeah.
But this whole, I don't know, the argument was kind of a non-argument for me. I mean, it was just, it didn't make sense.
What was the argument?
Well, I mean, what,
and why would there be
well,
one? That's where I'm confused.
That,
go ahead.
It was just, it didn't need to be a thing, I think.
No.
But,
at least in my opinion.
No, someone just said that they, like, okay, straight burlesque shows, well, like, that's pretty weird, and I'm paraphrasing, but...
I think really it wasn't... the argument came after a complete misunderstanding.
So let's
put it in context. That isn't really the issue.
No.
It sparked a discussion because people acknowledged, okay, that was misunderstood, I'm sorry, I think we all got off track here. So I think the real topic that came out of it was not a misunderstood comment. No one was pitting straight against queer. That was not what was meant.
Right.
But I think, but what the subsequent discussion, I think there, now, when I say there are two, that's simplistic, but for reasons of discussion, sometimes we have to try to simplify.
Mm-hmm.
So there's the performer aspect of, oh, there are some artists who are cis or straight, and there are some who are queer, and then there are the other thing. There are
like
some there are some venues that, you know, for their core audience is maybe more hetero or straight, and another venue's core audience is more queer. So those are two separate discussions.
Mm-hmm. Well, there are some promoters who are targeting a more hetero, you know, what do you want to call it? What's the name of that audience?
I think the first...
What's the right way to put it?
I don't want
to mess that up.
There's no right way.
But I think what's important, I think the one thing that's important in any discussion like this is to start with, no one is implying or saying that any one of these things is better or worse or good or bad.
No.
It's a discussion to understand... Each one of them. There's
yeah.
no one saying one has more value than the other. Yeah. And we all, I'm guilty of it, tend to get a little defensive. And that's when valuable learning just goes away. I think on the performer side, I'm just going to give an analogy that works for me, and it's very simplistic. There's much more crossover. Mm-hmm. But in the world of professional dance, which both Aurora and I were brought up mm-hmm. in, if you, again, there's much more diversity than this. But for a good example, let's break it down as a model to ballet, modern dance, and musical theater. Mm. So, one could say, well, one of the essences of classical ballet is to show virtuosity on point shoes, this pure technique. And that in itself is profound. That would be like classical burlesque. Like, you are showing how beautiful and amazing. That in itself is art. Okay.
The technique.
The art
technique.
Of the reveal.
Right. The art of doing this.
Yeah.
So then you have this modern dance, which is experimental in nature, and maybe you're going to take a risk that, like, let's go of some technique sometimes or whatever.
And for me, that would be more like alternative.
Alternative
burlesque, like
performance, alternative neo-ish burlesque. I mean, you know.
I never called it neo because when the whole burlesque thing blew up in the early 2000s, late 90s.
Uh-huh.
They were all very classical, and they were calling themselves neo because they were the new wave of burlesque.
Right.
And that's cool. So when I started Badass, I was like, "Yeah, alternative burlesque."
Okay.
And I used to get gruff from some neo
or like a performance
going,
art.
No,
right?
It's neo, and I'm
okay.
like, "No, actually, I'm different than you. It's alternative."
All right. So to clarify, because I agree with you. To clarify, let's say the analogy is modern dance would be alternative or performance art burlesque.
Musical theater might be.
Musical theater to me would be. Things that...
It's traditional to me.
Well, to me, what musical theater and burlesque would be what things like the ones doing the homage to cosplay and doing these themed shows about famous characters
mm-hmm.
from comic books or iconic sci-fi movies would be like musical theater. They're taking mm-hmm. characters that exist that are not themselves... And they're throwing them out there in these glorious ways.
Right.
So the point of that is like to take the known. Like a musical theater production is not necessarily to reveal some personal political thing. It's to go, hey, we're going to tell a story bigger than life. And it's going to be amazing and, you know, whatever. So, and I'm not saying there's not crossover. But let's just say you have sort of ballet, classical, modern dance, alternative, and musical theater sort of. Comic-Con, you know, Neo.
Yeah.
So you have these three streams that have tons of overlap. None of them is more valuable than the other in any way.
Mm-hmm.
And some performers cross over and do that. Like, we have a Austin Powers number that would be more Neo, like, musical theater. Most of our work falls in the alternative range.
Yes.
There are some people who do classical in a little bit. There are some people who do a myriad. What I would say is what differentiates someone who mainly stays in one or the other is your creative process.
Hmm.
You know your thing is the classic, whether it be ballet, music, writing, or burlesque, then your intention is to, every time you come up with a number, showcase those elements. If you are in the modern alternative vein, regardless of your art form, your intention does not start with showcasing anything. It starts with, what is it I'm trying to make the audience feel, wrestle with? And so every choice you make after that deals with that. If you're in the musical theater, Neo Comic-Con send-up over here, you start with a known story or character,
mm-hmm.
and then you go, how can I flip that on its head?
Right.
So to me, what causes that difference in the product or the piece of art is your intention at the beginning. And where I think that can also shift within that process is within either of these streams, you might have a straight person, a cis person, a gay or lesbian or bi, a trans person, a gender nonconforming person. All of those things will inform your choices along the way. And so where I think the misunderstanding came was, for some people who could fall into any of those groups, gender or sexuality-wise, some people are not concerned with that part of themselves being part of the number they're making. Okay? Some people are. And I believe that that's an important distinction to make, your intention in your artwork. And
this is true, but I also believe as artists, I like to, for me personally, I think of myself this way.
Mm-hmm.
As an artist, I'm like a living Etch-a-Sketch.
Mm-hmm.
A blank canvas, or a canvas I can make blank at will. Like, I can shake the Etch-a-Sketch and then become something new if I choose to. I don't want to, I guess, I've always, yes, alternative burlesque, I relate to that. But then I also have more classical pieces, like my Mae West act, you know. I feel as an artist, and it's not just for me, it's not just burlesque. I sing, I write, I paint, I do any of those things. I don't ever want to be trapped in one genre. And I felt like to even bring up or to pigeonhole burlesque, queer burlesque, just to me feels like it's limiting.
Well, it is, but I think, I mean, I guess the best, the only way I can communicate something valid on this subject is literally from how I go about it. I can't speak for anyone else. And I think that's the only time I get frustrated with some of the things I read. When I read, I think the main thing that frustrated me about this conversation that happened was it seemed
online.
Yes, yeah. Some of the comments did not acknowledge there could be a different perspective, and that's really all that I think it was wrong with it is, as long as you respect that there are other perspectives and they have equal value with yours, then that's fine. I mean, for me, and this, I'm not even saying I speak for every trans person. I'm speaking for myself right now. Because of the times we live in, I mean, right now, in this moment in culture and history, I went through a lot of struggle. Aurora knows this. Aurora knows this. And I have struggled a lot with when I came out as trans, because when Aurora and I first met, I was not out.
You were not.
And when I came out as trans, I went through a little bit of a
That's
crisis.
That's around the time we met.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I went through a crisis as an artist in that I recognize the time I live in. And now, I'm not saying this is a right choice for everyone. I'm not talking about transitioning. I'm talking about as a performer.
Mm-hmm.
I felt strongly that I'm not going to ignore that when I go on stage, you're seeing a trans person. Because I'm not going to, like the caterpillar moment I talked about in the production, I'm not going to go away and not perform for 4 years, fully transition, and go, well, I'm passable now, I'll go back on stage.
Right.
So you are seeing me on stage at different, various moments in my transition.
Which I find exciting.
And it can be revolting to some people, and that's fine. But because of this, I understand it. So, I'm not going to ignore it because the audience can't ignore it. So, for me, I have decided to accept
embrace it,
but also accept a responsibility to be clear. I am in a field where you have so many gender expressions, which are all beautiful.
Yeah.
You have all these things going on that I like to be very clear about who I am. And I'm not one of these, like, as a trans woman, I have no problem with drag queens or drag kings in any way. But I like to be clear to an audience that, now I have drag king numbers. See, that's the thing. I'm a woman, so if I do my Michael Jackson number, I'm doing drag, then playing a man. But I like to educate. To me, burlesque, just like any other, I view my numbers as entertainment, art, and outreach. So I want the audience to know they're seeing a trans woman in transition doing that number. Because maybe they'll leave and if they came in hating trans people, still hate them. But they'll have to face that choice. Maybe they'll be a little jolted and go, but I kind of liked that. You know, whatever they're feeling, I want them to know who they saw doing it. Now, I'm not saying that that's the right or wrong choice. It's the choice I made.
Well, your style of performance.
To do it.
You've always
Someone else may choose to not put that in their art. All I felt that was off to me in this discussion was there were some comments that really didn't want to step back and go, oh, I can see how we might approach this differently, and they're both valid. And I think that's what's healthy, is to really step back and learn about people that are completely different than you. I still learn from straight people. They're not all evil. Not all of them. I learn a ton from gender nonconforming and gender queer people. Because people assume that trans people are the same, and we're not. Because I know I am a woman. I'm not a third or other gender, but I acknowledge they exist. So we have similarities, but we have differences. So when I can talk to someone who says, I'm not a man or a woman, I can relate to some, but some of it's fascinating to me. So that's my whole point, is when we can get past that initial defensiveness, which is natural, and that those things we feel, and we get on that, ugh, if we can kind of breathe through that for a moment, we can actually understand that these differences are what makes a show interesting. So you don't see 6 carbon copies in your show, you know.
So it was the narrow vision of the thread that drove you nuts.
It was just that. Yeah. It was just the lack of allowing that everybody's voice had a place. It wasn't about right or wrong. Feelings get hurt, and that's valid. And I felt like the only misunderstanding in this particular discussion that literally hurt feelings was acknowledged and apologized for. But then the whole rest of the discussion, I did feel there were times that it was like, okay, there's some tunnel vision here. Step back and allow for the myriad of amazingness that exists in these stages on New York City, all over the world, but this is our community here.
Yeah.
And we have such a beautiful opportunity in this city to get on stage and share. In this city, in 1 week, you can see more diversity and amazingness than you can see anywhere in this country, for sure. And maybe there's 5 other places in the world in that same week you could see it.
Right.
That's pretty special. So it breaks my heart when we let some of our ego and feelings, like, bring that down, and we don't patiently and thoughtfully grow and challenge each other and piss each other off. But then if you piss each other off with respect, that's different than doing it with disrespect. It's not about proving you're right.
You can agree to disagree.
It's about saying, look, this is, I feel this way. But if someone else says, well, I feel this way, why are your feelings more important? Well, they're not, you know?
Yeah. I feel like people can't agree to disagree.
Some people can.
No, sorry, yes. Many people can, but the certain few that can't, it's really frustrating.
No, it really makes them angry when you're willing to agree to disagree.
Yeah, when you try to make a comment of like, let's just, you know.
Let's talk about something fun, like how you prep to piss on stage.
Well, I was going to ask Aurora about our creative process.
There we go.
So that might...
Segue.
That's a perfect segue.
It is.
I mean...
Thank you, Bo.
You're welcome.
She wasn't ready.
No, I wasn't.
Or that, or your influences. Or what?
My what?
But no, you have a good, you have a creative process.
Of course.
Do I?
We have a collaborative process.
Well, I'm needing to ask for liking.
What made you become a dancer? I'm interviewing my wife.
Yes.
Give me the questions. Faux pas. That's not... I can't answer that. I mean, it was just a given in my life. I don't know.
She knew she was a dancer the way I knew I was a woman.
Right.
You just knew.
She
you
dances just know. Because she is.
Okay, well, what do you want to talk about, Aurora?
I dance, therefore I am.
Thank you, Velocity.
Yes.
Yes. I feel like, I mean, as a soloist...
So your creative process is just breathing.
Yes.
Basically.
Yeah. I'm still what?
how do we make numbers together? How do duet couples make numbers
together?
Well,
that's a different question.
I know, but like I'm trying to get.
I am impressed, by the way, by your prolific abilities together.
Oh, thank
I know
you.
It's. I was in a band for 10 years and ran it.
Oh shit!
And I know how hard it is to work with other people for mm-hmm. a consistent, lengthy period of time, and to continually give birth with them. Mm-hmm. That speaks volumes for your relationship. Mm-hmm. You know,
it helps when you leave your children on stage and don't bring them
home. Every single month, because I know it's always going to be something new. Like you guys. Mm-hmm. Never cease.
Thank you. Well, neither do you. Well, we actually harmonize. I mean, I think our creative process is really an extension of our marriage in that mm-hmm. we complement each other well. You know, mm-hmm. like we have different but very harmonizing gifts.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So that we're, you know, I think that's how it works. But I also think we respect each other equally. So nobody really has a final say. We both
no. There's no.
We final if we
say.
Both don't agree, then it doesn't stay in the piece. There's no one that's there's
okay.
no director here. It's
no.
like
it's a democracy.
Yes,
it is. I mean, the way we arrive at like a good example. I think examples are better. We
sure.
our Dalmatian number, which a lot of people react to,
yes.
did not start out as an homage to 101 Dalmatians.
No,
in any
it
way.
Came across. It,
we
found
was,
it.
We were like we should make. Like, we started with just fetish, because we like things to grow out of some things. We're
yeah.
like, well, we really don't, it was not supposed to have any comedy. We're like, mm-hmm. we don't have some intense fetish number.
No.
Fetish number.
We want a fetish
but
number.
Cruella De Vil is so fetish.
Well, thank
right.
you. But we started, on a totally different stream of thought, going, no, this is going to be like leather and intense and scary.
No, and we want like animal play that.
And
yeah.
it was not going to be that at all. And we started, we made part of it, and we were stuck. And we had done it just to the I Want to Be Your...
And then it was
done it to I Want to Be Your Dog by Joan Jett. We were
yes.
in rehearsal.
It was too obvious.
And we were
it
just
was...
like, we sat, we were in the lounge at Dixon Place.
Yeah.
We were rehearsing, and we were sitting there going, okay, this is just, it's not working. It's like, so what? We know what's going to happen. Who cares?
Yeah.
And then I said, well, let's just start listening to songs about dogs.
And you said... But you said Disney. You
and
did
I said,
say
well,
that.
Does Disney have anything?
And then I said, holy shit.
You got that idea, right?
101 Dalmatians.
Yeah, that was your idea.
Yeah.
And then we went, wait. And then the number just
the
went,
light bulb.
Just, so,
the light bulb went on
so,
the
yeah.
right
yeah.
here.
And what's amazing about that I love, just like, I mean, that's why it's an extension of our relationship and marriage, is that number never gets made. By one of us, and it exists because we both went through this process together. But it started as and here's what's interesting is it started as we need this intense, serious number,
this fetish
which is
number.
Not it's not our personality at all. So we tried, and we're like, this sucks. This number sucks. And I said, doggies, Disney, and I threw out like word association. And you were like, when are word Dalmatians? And the number that people love is because of that.
Yeah.
And so I guess that's a good, like, tangible example of trying to describe the nebulous creative process. But basically, it's a combination of us being willing
right.
to start with something. Admit
really
to,
willing.
And admit to each other, yeah, this sucks, doesn't it? This is going nowhere.
We do that a lot.
And
I think
you
both have the magical power to leave your egos at the door with each other.
Yeah, and and we're also making, stay tuned, because we're making a blooper reel of rehearsals.
Oh my God.
Which is hilarious.
The worst videos
the
ever.
Worst, it's like the worst, like dropping each other in lifts. Thankfully, we're still here.
Wow.
Oh, that was, I would love to
oh my
see
God.
That.
With the like,
The sound effects.
Yeah.
Because
sound effects,
you're like,
yeah.
boom. You hear the thud and the camera shakes, you know. So yeah, we're making... For our fans, and our enemies.
With us cursing each other.
And then we get up, what were you doing?
What the fuck?
What the hell was that? Yeah. So we are willing to put ourselves out there and make a blooper reel of our worst rehearsal
I'm
moments.
I'm excited for
ever. So stay tuned, everybody.
Yeah. That's that's a great way to go out, too, I might add.
Speaking of going out.
Yes.
So you have recently.
You want to throw this into the mix.
Yes, you have recently made the emotional, heart-wrenching announcement. And as family members of Badass Burlesque, now we know we only have 3 left with you in November, which is the crying show.
November, yes.
December,
Emotional
which
Rescue,
is the
which
December is
an
the witch show, the witch show.
Season of the Witch,
and then we have the February finale,
which that's a date soon to be announced. But
and
right.
So we have 3 shows left in the active Badass family. We know the Badass family will go on forever.
Yes.
But what? If you don't mind, I'm becoming the interview. I'm talking.
I know,
I'm
I
topping
know.
From the bottom.
You are.
What if you don't mind for our audience? Were
careful.
Your...
I top from the bottom too.
What if you don't mind?
Me too.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, we got three
Too
people
good.
Topping the
Clean
room.
On that one. Yes.
So, cheers to that.
So, what
can you share with us? But just why at this point with the success and influence and inspiration and really, would you share, Aurora, what you were saying about the platform and the space that Velocity has provided for the kind of work artists doing risks? You were sharing this with me, like, what? Or you want me to say it?
I'll say it. I mean, you said this in your post on Facebook when you announced the closure of Badass, but
I went back to why I began it.
Yeah,
where I am now, looking at the scene and where it's at. And yeah,
right, and that's so important. And I mean, I feel like me coming into this late in the game, it's so important to have a place. And I know that there are now a little more opportunities to do this, but to have a place.
Way more than there used to
to have a place to just do whatever the fuck you want, and there are no limitations, and just for expression, put yourself out there.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, coming from a more dance background and like I feel like conservative background,
uh-huh.
having that opportunity on stage is such a gem. Is so special, and
well,
mine went blank. What?
No, I think for me,
you
I
know,
mean,
when the Blue Angel ended, it for me the Blue Angel really ended when Uta Hanna left, and Bonnie Dunn took over, and it became Lay Scandal, and 2 years into the Lay Scandal part of it. At the original Cutting Room venue, she, rightfully so, as a producer who is putting all of her heart and soul into this and keeping it alive, decided to change the format completely to cater more to the tourists and the mainstream, and she was always has been and will be a wonderful classical performer,
mm-hmm.
and wanted to create the show in that direction. So after being on the roster, if I included the Blue Angel years, that was 95. And by this point it would have been like 2002. And my kind of art was no longer welcome.
Oh.
Long story short. So, for me, that was, I guess, the end of this platform that I had where I could do whatever I want
mm-hmm.
and create that had meant so much to me before.
Mm-hmm.
And my reaction to that sadness and that loss was to start Badass.
I'm so appreciative.
So, like, Badass existed in a way because something else ended?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I'm ending Badass because I have lots of things I want to do creatively
mm-hmm.
that are going to take up a considerable amount of my mind power. And I'm not stopping performing.
Well, of course
I'll still
not.
Be creating.
The world would crawl up into
I'm
a
not
void
giving
of
that
Cheetos
up.
And junk food.
But producing every month and everything that goes into it,
right.
It's robbing my life of other platforms that I desperately need for myself right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I also feel that it's closure. It's an end of an era for me.
Mm-hmm.
I made my point, ultimately, is what I feel
you
like
did.
Saying.
Yeah.
I was mad and sad and angry and frustrated, and I started this thing. And I'm really excited to see that so many other people have started their thing, too. And I feel that mission accomplished. So to speak.
And how many years?
And it's safe to move forward, evolve. I know you love that word, faux pas. Yes. I feel like that's the door. In order for me to evolve, I have to close one of the doors.
Sure. So the other ones can open.
Fallen Woman has just begun.
Yeah.
It'll be a year this month on the 16th.
Okay.
Well, not this month. This month when it airs.
Right. and so Badass will have run for 13 years.
Yes.
The perfect coven. 13.
Right.
As of February. and that will be the 13th anniversary
yes.
show.
Such a beautiful round.
Sorry, I'm sad too.
Of course.
Trust me, it's definitely.
We're sad.
Yes.
I'm definitely feeling like I'm putting something to bed.
Mm-hmm.
But I also feel like I'm about to. Cross over into some other newer pastures that I have yet to experience.
Well, we can't wait.
You know, it involves blues band and book writing and Fallen Woman radio and all that jazz.
Wow.
I'm excited.
Well, you know, when
I hope I answered that.
You did.
You did.
Well, well, thank you for sharing.
That was a big question.
No, I'm grateful that you were open to talking about it. I mean, when I, for me, because I encountered some invitations to Badass before knowing Aurora.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, my sort of trajectory in burlesque is sort of maybe. It's kind of like a lot of things in my life, like non-traditional linear. And we had this moment backstage at New York Burlesque Festival this year, because 6 years ago, I
you
came
started,
into burlesque.
Yeah.
And you've been in it
3 years.
3 years.
Now. Yeah.
So the bizarre thing about my blah into burlesque was I had done pseudo burlesque, but not really, in some of my own performance art dance shows.
You brought erotic elements into
your
performance.
So
yes.
I randomly, 6 years ago, was like, I have this number in a show I did at Philly Fringe.
It could be burlesque.
Let me send the video to New York Burlesque Festival.
Oh.
And it was the wedding cake number I did. And it was in a show about same-sex marriage because it wasn't passed yet.
Uh-huh.
And so it was accepted. And then I'm freaking out because it's like, be careful what you wish for.
Right.
So I'm on this show.
Trial
at the,
by fire.
The Bell, uh-huh. Yeah, I'm on this show at the Bell House. And I'm, because I'd gone to the old Slipper Room before it was into shows. Because, I mean, to back up a little bit, I had gone and seen a lot of shows. And so, like, I was like, oh, wow, these people are amazing. So I get on this festival and then it hits me. What? Okay. And I remember being really nervous, and I went on stage to do this number, and halfway through, the zipper on my corset got stuck. Tigger was standing on the edge of the stage, like, watching, and I heard him yell, "Rip it, bitch! Rip it!" And
yes,
I ripped
Tigger.
The corset.
Go, Tigger.
And when I came off stage, Tigger said, "Welcome to our world," and hugged me, and, you know, hugged me. But then the next year I got on again, because I was doing sort of that kind of number, like a showy number.
Uh-huh.
But then I was on this show, and I wasn't out transitioning, but I was sort of not sure who I was, and kind of going into, yeah, I know I'm a woman, I need you to just be a woman, I'm sort of grappling with it.
Accepting.
Well, I was on a show that Rose Wood was on. Oh. And Rose at that point
said... And she
said,
was on a New York Burlesque Festival show?
No, a different venue. She got was on it. A Hypergender with
okay.
me.
Okay, yes, got it.
And Rose said, you need to be at the box with me. And so she was like, good. Come over here. And so I went into this development phase of... Really, it was a phase of beautiful art and also coming out for me.
Right.
Well... Then my numbers weren't so festival friendly for a couple of years. So I
welcome to my world.
I kind of went, you know, I'm not gonna worry about it. I'm not gonna define what I'm doing as burlesque or not.
It took me so many years to have festival friendly
right.
pieces.
So so Rose was this big influence, but then here's what happened in this period of mm-hmm. becoming a box performer and still
getting
booked.
Getting boxed.
Then Tigger, who has helped me so much through, I mean, my horrible, unhealthy drink binging times, so many unhealthy things, said to me one time, with a name like Faux Pas, you're going to have missteps. We've all been there. You know, like, was a lifeline for me. But Tigger got me a gig at this benefit, and I went to it, and I walked backstage, and... Darlinda's in the dressing room.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like the stupidest salivating groupie. I went up to her and I said, oh my God, you don't know me, but I love you and you're amazing. And so she was like, oh no. And after the show, she was like, wow, you're really good. So I was like, will you adopt me and be my burlesque mommy? And you know, I was so pushy about it, she couldn't refuse. So she became my burlesque mommy. So Rose, then Darlinda became my burlesque mom. But then shortly after that, however you booked me, you booked me. And you were this...
Well, I saw you. I thought you were fabulous.
So you were this other person that where I was like, oh, I don't have to worry about censoring what I do to do burlesque.
Right.
And so you and what you do with Badass was this other affirmation... that I didn't have to change the evolution of what I was doing. And what was a nice... There were two kind of closing of the circles.
I like to create a playground where people can go back to their original source and be whoever the fuck and do whatever the fuck they want to do.
And I'll wind up my long-winded point here with two things happened this year. We were backstage at New York Burlesque Festival, and I pulled you aside and Tigger after the Golden Pasty show, and I said... I just want to say this because I got this memory 6 years ago of when I was in the first burlesque festival that morning.
Uh-huh.
And I said, Tigger, Aurora, you are the two reasons I'm alive and standing here today. Because when I met you, Tigger, I didn't care if I was going to live till the next day. And when I met you, Aurora, it gave me a reason to live till the next day. But the other thing that you did for me, Velocity, with Badass, was I know we're sisters in this badassery.
Mm-hmm.
And I found out at New York Burlesque Festival, Darlinda, my burlesque mommy, came up and said, you have a grandmother. And I said, what? She said, Dirty Martini's my burlesque mom. So that means she's your burlesque grandma. Now, Dirty Martini has decided she wants to be Burlesque Evil Stepmommy, so that's her title.
Oh, yeah.
But...
She's a Scorpio.
But the fact that all of these artists are regulars on your show shows me that the synchronicity of if you're true to yourself, you end up finding your family, and they find you.
It's very true.
And so... That is what Badass has affirmed for me, not just the forum to do whatever I want, it's also the affirmation that that's bigger than just an act or a show. It's that for all of us who had to sort of go somewhere over the rainbow or run away from home or be banished from home, we have a family. And if we are really authentic and true, we find our badass family. And
we
so
do.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you. I can't wait to see what you do for the emotional rescue on November 28th.
Oh, you'll see.
Woo! I wonder if it'll have anything to do with the election results.
No, it won't. It will have nothing to do with them.
Scary times. Scary times. Raise a glass or a can, depending on what you're... Chin Chin, I love you two so much.
I love you.
Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having us here.
Beyond honored.
I can smell the apathy invading every pore of me, hanging on to destiny as they make a whore of me. I take the costume willingly. Apropos is killing me. My smile is congealing me. I can't explain me. Take my hand, don't be afraid. Every girl is here to get paid. Every man is here to get laid. Everyone will be enslaved. And they tell me I'm man-made. I'm inside a screaming place. I'm inside a screaming place. I'm inside a screaming place. Give me blood and soul money. My mouth is open and running. Eyes are crying and howling. Gave away golden honey. Faking it. Get them horny. Kill this chair. Lead a bunny. Cause she's so fucking phony. Take my hand. Don't be afraid. Every girl is here to get paid. Every man is here to get laid. Everyone will be enslaved. And they tell me I'm man-made. I'm inside a screaming place. I'm inside a screaming place. I'm inside a screaming place. The animal's purse is heavy. Feeders are ready. Slaughter is our healing. The nagel and the begging. We are choiced of and greedy. Polish our teeth for the feeding. My heavy heart is stealing. False intentions of the needy. Take my hand. Don't be afraid. Every girl is here to get paid. Every man is here to get laid. Everyone will be enslaved. And they tell me I'm man-made. I'm inside a screaming place.
I'm inside
a screaming place.
Replaced by a cross that my uterus must bear. I am Eve.
My name is Velocity Child. Every Thursday at the stroke of midnight, step into the parlor of Fallen Woman, a weekly soiree of artists on the fringe with underground thoughts and voices shared with uncensored abandon through opinions, humor, candor, and songs.